The IMG Roadmap is the only podcast dedicated to coaching international medical graduates and success blueprints for this unique pathway. I am Dr. Nina Loom, your host, a previous IMG turned hospital medicine physician, healthcare administrator, speaker, and coach. I empower, encourage, and equip you with actionable steps that you can take towards the residency position of your dreams. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the IMG Roadmap Podcast. Today's guest, I think, is our first orthopedic surgeon that's coming on the show. So I'm really excited, you guys. Like, I've been trying to get the show to be as diverse as possible, and this is my opportunity to get into the world of an orthopod so we can ask him questions. So welcome to the podcast, Dr. Adrian. How are you?
Hey, awesome. Hey, Nina. Thanks for having me. Very happy to hear I'm the first orthopod. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, and there's tons of IMGs that probably have questions around, you know, oh my gosh, is this even possible as an IMG and all that. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, I mean, like you said, I mean, I'm an orthopedic surgeon now. I am an attending surgeon here in Vancouver, BC. I was very lucky to come back to my hometown, but this was after a very long road, which I'm sure we'll talk about today, as an IMG. I started my med school over in Ireland at University College Dublin. And spent 5 years there. When I was going through the program was 5 years. And then, as you guys probably all know, spent my time slogging through exams, slogging through electives overseas, and then was lucky enough to match into the first round back in Canada, back into the University of Ottawa for my orthopedic residency. And then fast forward a few years, a couple fellowships later, here I am.
That's pretty awesome. So let's break this down. You're from Vancouver and you went to medical school in Ireland. Tell us a little bit about why you chose to go to Ireland.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, for myself, the biggest thing was that coming out of undergrad, I wasn't necessarily the best student in terms of marks, right? I started off a little bit rough, you know, I moved away. So it's always a bit of an experience, I think, when you move away. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. So, but I definitely picked it up once I figured out I wanted to do medicine. Once I had a goal, you know, I really bore down and then got my grades up. But unfortunately, because as everyone knows how competitive it is in North America, I just diversified myself and a couple of people above me had gone overseas for med school. So while I was applying to Canada, the United States, as everyone does, I also applied overseas and specifically to Ireland because I had heard that, hey, they had a good reputation. And it just so happens that the first year I got into an Irish med school and I was like, hey, that sounds awesome. You know, moving over to Europe, living there for a few years and just kind of having the opportunity to kind of get a new experience. I thought it was amazing. So, you know, I jumped at it, you know, I went over there and then, I was extremely happy that I did, but that was basically the onus. I mean, and when you think about it too, I think when I was going through, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but when I was going through the average matriculation age was actually pretty old and people actually didn't get in until I think their second or maybe third year applying or even after a master's degree. So for me to go to Ireland and spend an extra year was actually still faster than most people would, you know, or I was younger at least than most people normally who finished med school. So I didn't find it was a negative factor at that point, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty awesome. So you talked about in your introduction that you had to hop around for elective. So can you tell us a little bit about what that process was like for you?
Yeah, and at the time, again, the program was a little newer. So there wasn't like necessarily formal relationships with any North American schools for electives. So we were a little bit on our own. But the nice thing that we did have specified elective time given to us by the medical school. And luckily, we were still on the same schedule as the North Americans in terms of, you know, when, you know, our start time and end times. So it was a difficult process because, especially for the United States, we had to get a lot of our visas on our own. Canada wasn't as much of an issue with respect to visas, because I'm Canadian, but it was difficult because some of the schools only accepted a limited amount of IMG for electives every year. And those spots filled up very quickly. And actually, a funny story of how I actually got into ortho was actually a direct result of one of my electives. It was one of my electives that I applied for in the United States. And originally, I thought I wanted to do general surgery, and that's what I applied for. And it was my first elective, and they got back to me and said, hey, listen, we don't actually have a gen surge spot for you, but you can do ortho instead. And I said, sure, why not? We'll just try it out. And actually, it turns out I loved ortho so much that I changed all the rest of my electives to to ortho. So that's kind of how we got here.
Yeah. Yeah. So before we even go forward, someone's going to ask me, what hospital did he get an ortho elective in as an IMG? Because that's a big deal. Most IMGs don't know how to find their own electives, where to start. So can you walk us through a little bit of that process?
Yeah. So I think the most important thing is you have to just, be smart about it, because what I did was I looked not just who accepted electives, IMGs for electives, but also who accepted IMGs for residency, because not all schools do that. So I targeted the schools that accepted IMG residents and tried to do electives there to show my face. Specifically in Canada, Dalhousie was one of them. And then University of Ottawa, where I ended up, also accepts IMGs, but I didn't get an elective there because it filled up too quickly. And then in the States, the place that actually started all off was Yale. And I got an elective there, and that's when they changed from Gen Surg to orthopedics. In addition to that, I think what was really important too, and I think it really helped me clinically, is I organized a whole bunch of electives just on my summertime, you know, when we were supposed to have time off, outside of anything formal, right? So, for example, I actually came to UBC and did an unofficial elective, and basically it was an observership, but, you know, it got me in the door because it kind of allowed me to get to know the program directors and even get a couple of reference letters that I may not have had access to if it wasn't for taking those extra steps. So you just have to be creative about it and a little bit savvy, but it's definitely, definitely doable.
Yeah, right. And for anybody listening who doesn't know, UBC is University of British Columbia. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, thank you. Yep, that's true.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, that's really interesting because, you know, I get this question almost often. And that's one of the reasons why there's a blog post I wrote about how programs that have offered electives or observerships, IMGs, just because it's something that I don't realize people understand, like the power of Google and just being able to go on the internet and type elective rotation in Texas and then just start going down that rabbit hole that you already go down when you get on Instagram. So just put that same rabbit hole energy on Google and just go right in, dip into it, and you find something. And then you start sending out emails, letters of interest, and you apply. So I think sometimes, you know, we've made it so mystical when it's actually very straightforward.
It's totally interesting you say that, because same thing for me. A lot of the questions I get, you know, people are sending me DMs all the time, being, hey, you know, how do I find this? How do I find that? And I literally just like, I look up the website and send it back to them. It's oftentimes it's like, you know, UBC, you know, University of British Columbia .ca. And then on their website, it's going to just be, you know, IMG electives, you know, things like that. So yeah. Like I said, a simple Google search, you know, spend all that YouTube, Instagram energy and just, you know, start looking up schools. I think it's a great start.
Yeah. So actually today, you know, I had an IMG from Canada. So this person still lives in Canada, and they sent me a DM asking, and this was on Instagram, and DM is direct messaging for those of you who are not on Instagram that are listening. But they sent me a direct message asking me, you know, hey, I'm in Canada right now. I have a dream of becoming a neurosurgeon. Do you recommend that I go to a Caribbean school? So my answer was no, because I've just found it much more competitive for Caribbean medical school students to get into residency than chalk list of even sometimes the more competitive or limited spot residency positions, like the subsurgical specialties. So with that response though, you know, here I am now talking to someone who went to Ireland and then came back and got into orthopedic surgery, it's in the US and even in Canada, it's one of the more competitive specialties. So can you touch a little bit on what you would recommend to a person like that who is still starting out in that place of decision and they're not certain as to what path to take?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's such a tough question because, you know, there are so many barriers for an IMG who wants to do something competitive like neurosurgery or, you know, orthopedics or something along those lines. And, you know, looking back, you know, it's hard for me because I'm colored, I guess, a little bit because it worked out for me. So, you know, I'm kind of looking at everything through a brighter lens. But I have to say, I mean, ultimately, when I was applying for orthopedic surgery residency in Canada, there was a group of about almost 300 applicants for 1 year. And in all of Canada, there were like 8 spots. So, you know, I mean, you hate to say it, but the numbers are stacked against you. So that's why, like we were talking about electives, I think you have to be really savvy about things. So, but at the end of the day, also, I firmly believe that if there is something you really want to do and you have set your heart out on it, like, for example, orthopedics for me or neurosurgery for that person, you know, I think you have to explore that at least and try to go for it. Because I think if you do, you know, again, looking at it with a brightly colored lens, if you do things earnestly and wholeheartedly and for the right reasons, I think the universe, you know, smiles upon you a little bit and things will work out for you. Again, you have to take it upon yourself to be savvy and be smart about things. But I do think that, you know, especially if you're going to spend the rest of your life, you know, doing this really intense job, you have to really like it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And, you know, I never have a good answer for that. So I'm not sure what you tell people, but you know, I kind of, you know, something along the lines of follow your heart, but be really, really smart about it. And here's what I did, you know?
Right. Because, you know, work ethic goes a long way and there's so many individual variables that play a role as to whether an IMG would match, period. Right.
No.
And before you go into where they're matching, what specialty, when they match, because you may match, but it's your fifth attempt, right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, those questions are very tricky because it's not a yes or no direct answer, but sometimes in the direct messaging, there's only so much space that you can type. So, you know, for someone starting out like that, I'm usually more like, yeah, you know, I have rose colored glasses on too, because it worked for me. I'm from Cameroon. I moved here for school. And now I'm an attending physician, went through this rigorous J-1 visa exchange process. Yeah. So of course I can see things and say, yeah, it's going to work. But realistically, if you had the worst work ethic ever, it probably would not work, right?
Correct. Yes.
You know, so yeah, so it's like, you know, in such instances that it's easier to say, take the easier route if you can, right? Just be a Canadian medical student or a US medical student and just hopefully you stumble your way into it. Yeah, but who knows? That's not right or wrong. But back to you. So we want to hear more. So when did you finish residency?
Oh man. Okay, hold on, I gotta figure this out. What year is it right now? Sorry. So I finished med school. I finished med school in 2011. So a year before you did.
Yeah.
So I finished residency in 2016.
Okay.
And so then I spent 2 years doing fellowships. So I finished in 2018. And then I started my job in 2019. So I'm about maybe a year and a half into the job now.
Yeah.
My first attending gig. So it's a long, you know, like you said, it's a long, long road.
Right.
But yeah. So, but you know, again, I think message is just, you got to be every step, it's always be competitive. Cause I found that I thought that once I got in to med school, I was like, oh, it's easy street. And then of course it's not, right. And then once I got into residency, oh man, this is going to be great. It's easy street, but it's not, right. Cause then you got to do your fellowships because the job market's so competitive. So, and then once you finish your two fellowships, you think you're the most marketable and trained person, a doctor to, you know, Canada's ever seen. And then you come here and there's 50 people, literally 50 fully trained, fellowship trained surgeons in Canada with orthopedic surgeons with no job. So it's unreal in terms of how competitive it is. So
yeah,
every step you have to be very, very savvy and smart and, you know, but also keep your, I guess, good humor about you and don't be too jaded, right?
Right.
And it's a very fine line, as you probably know, fine line to ride.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. So, you know, most people want to know, how long did it take? Da, 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 da. So let's just break it down for them, you know, very clearly. Med school, 5 years.
Yeah.
During those 5 years, it included clinical electives in Canada and the US.
Yeah.
And then residency for 5 years.
5 years. Yeah, it's a 5-year residency.
And then you did a fellowship in, what was your fellowship in?
So my two fellowships, I have one, which was, my first one was in orthopedic trauma, which is actually in San Francisco at University of California, San Francisco. And we're based out of the San Francisco General Hospital, which that year turned into the Facebook hospital, Zuckerberg San Francisco General Hospital. And so that was an awesome experience. But just like you, I had to go through that, a whole new set of barriers in terms of my J-1 visa. And then after that, I did a second fellowship back in Canada, which was for upper extremities. So it was a comprehensive shoulder to fingertips, so shoulder, elbow, hand, and wrist. And that included microsurgery. And I was very lucky to do that one as well, because we had some great mentors, which is another topic, you know, it's people ask me about all the time. But I had some great mentors who helped me along the way, and then eventually made some really good connections and ended up here in Vancouver. And now I'm an attending surgeon in upper extremity at the University of British Columbia, specializing in shoulder, elbow, hand, and wrist surgery.
That's pretty cool. That's so awesome. I live in Kentucky, and I think we have just a handful of like hand surgeons. Like I have to literally send a patient up to Louisville, which is 2 hours from where I live, to get a hand surgeon.
So Louisville's a good spot for hand surgery though.
Yeah.
So they're good, but we're rare for sure. It's interesting. Yeah.
It is. So, you know, I'm going to get questions from, you know, IMGs that are here in the States, and they're saying, well, you know, I'm not a Canadian. I don't have an opportunity to get residency training in Canada, but can I do a fellowship in the States without training in the States? What would you say to that? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, so that's the difficulty. So I think what happens, I'm not so sure about the United States, right? Because I'm not so familiar with them, unfortunately. My understanding from what my friends have told me, again, this is, you know, you should look this up, because this is not expert advice. This is complete level 5 evidence. But basically what I've understand is that as an IMG, you can do fellowships. And I think once, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think once you do an X amount of fellowships, then you're eligible to write the boards. I don't know what the number is. So yeah. In Canada, though, you know, we our institution at University of British Columbia, we accept fellows from pretty much anywhere. And every year we have overseas fellows. So we have people coming from Europe, from Australia, from Asia, and all sorts of places. And it's awesome because it really disperses, you know, we can kind of cross-pollinate and disperse our knowledge. Whether you get a job or not, though, in Canada afterwards, that's a little more difficult. If you basically have to come from a country that has a reciprocal agreement and reciprocal licensing. Otherwise, unfortunately, you have to go back, do all your exams and do residency again. So there are, when I was going through residency also, there were a couple of my colleagues who, you know, were trained doctors, for example, in India, and they had to come over and redo their residency.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe that's the same thing here. So yes, if you take a fellowship position without residency training, you may get in and you may get trained, but you'll still, if you want to stay in the States to practice, you'll still have to go back and fulfill that prerequisite requirement of a residency. I know a nephrologist that did that from the UK, did a fellowship here and thought he could just get grandfathered in, was told to go back and do internal medicine before he could practice as both.
Yes, right. Yeah.
So it's a little bit, I think the US is kind of tight with that stuff for sure. So, So let's talk a little bit more about, you know, you're a social media guru as well. So can you tell us how you balance it all? I mean, being in like orthopedic surgeon and running a social media platform, and really like, what's your motivation for that? Like, why did you start sharing that much on social media?
So first of all, the balance is very difficult, and I'm finding the balance, especially now as an attending, very difficult. But when I first started, I just wanted to document and show people like the behind the scenes life of doctors. And that's how I started out. And then I was lucky because when I started it in fellowship a few years ago, it was, you know, fellowship, anyone who's done a fellowship knows that it's pretty much the best years of your medical training, at least in my opinion, because, you know, you go and do all these awesome cases, but your responsibility really isn't that much. So you do have a lot of time to do things like social media. And it became basically like almost like a yearbook for our fellowship crew, and we were really tight. And so that's why that kind of what I morphed into. But once I became an attending, it has been very difficult to keep that up. And, you know, I mean, I found myself being off it. I was off it for almost a year just because of how busy it was. You know, and everyone who's an attending will tell you your first year of practice is the most intense and the hardest. So I really tried to dedicate myself to become a good surgeon, first of all. And it's only recently, these past few months, that I kind of got back on there to restart it. I think it's really important, like we were talking about before when we were off air, but I think it's a very important platform for people to get information, like good information. It's a great platform for people to connect. I mean, we would not be connecting if it wasn't for, you know, social media and your podcast and everything. I mean, we met through Instagram, right? And funny enough, like some of really good friends of mine, I met through Instagram and they became like in real life friends.
Yeah.
So my motivation moving forward is still pretty much the same. I want to show people what it's like to be a doctor, maybe dispel some of the myths and show people that just like you are, your platform is like, you can do this. You know, I mean, anyone who is willing to put in the time and the dedication can become a doctor, or can in any field healthcare.
Yeah, right.
And live well. I mean, my thing right now is working hard and living well. You can try to balance that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Working hard and living well. I love it. So guys, you can find Dr. Adrian on Instagram at Scrubbed Out. That's at ScrubbedOut. Scrubbed Out. And his website is www.scrubbedout.com, where he stays fixing tendons. I wish you guys could see his shirt right now. It says fixing tendons. That's pretty cool. But yes, so can you give us some final words of motivation? Because, I mean, one of the things that I would say gravitated me to your profile on social media was the positivity. And, you know, I was like, who's the surgeons always smiling? Always so positive. you know, and I think a lot of people come to my social media for the same reason. So let's give them what they're here for. Can you tell them some positive words of wisdom?
Yeah, you could do it. 100%. No, I mean, but I genuinely think you can do it. You know, when you look at the odds of any one of us, yourself, me, you know, like I said, the odds of, you know, not having a 4.0 and getting into med school, first of all, low, you know, there's options for that, right? The odds of being an international medical graduate, getting into a, you know, competitive, specialty residency program on the first iteration, like I said, it was literally 8 in about 300, so low. And then, you know, trying to get a job in the orthopedic market, unfortunately, it's very difficult in Canada right now. You know, we're a little bit different than the States. You can't just hang a shingle, you know, you have to work at a hospital somewhere. So, you know, I genuinely feel like that if I can do it, you know, I'm not definitely not the smartest person. I know I work hard and I can be smart about things. So if I believe that if you work hard and you're dedicated and this is what you really, really want to do, you can absolutely do it. And it's a huge and tough slog, you know, for those, you know, 10 years while you're going through training, but it is absolutely worth it. And I think anyone who's attending will tell you that those years are very difficult, but being attending is very, very rewarding and absolutely worth it to get out there and do what you're trained for. I wouldn't change anything.
Well, I'm glad that you said that because I agree. I agree 100%. Sometimes the pain is worth it. I think it's a disservice for any of us to think that we can achieve any level of success without going through some amount of pain and discomfort, and may I dare say suffering, because I believe it's because of those lows that we can experience highs. Because if there were no lows, you'll never experience a high. And I don't know. I'm more of the thought that, you know, what's the problem that I'm willing to suffer through? That's how I look at life now. It's, you know, what am I willing to suffer through? Because in my head, if I suffer through something, I eventually get some positive reward from it. If I don't have to struggle through anything, then I'm probably not looking hard enough, right? Because the things we want are usually not just, you can't just pluck it off a tree. So I think building some courage and some resilience definitely goes a long way.
No, I couldn't have said it any better. Like, you know, I completely agree with you that you have, you know, residency is hard. You have to accept it. It's, you know, it's going to suck a lot of times, you know, but it absolutely is worth it in the end. And, you know, like everyone always says, you know, nothing good comes out of something easy, right? So, I mean, you got to work for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, here you are, you know, you spent so many years through surgical training and fellowship. And then in your first year of work, you're like, I need to dedicate time to just be a good surgeon. And then you have to prioritize your life and say, hey, I'm going to step off of social media for a short while, get balance in that area, and then come back to it. I mean, that's life. And I think even for those that are listening, we can learn from that approach to say, yeah, you can step by from one thing and focus on the most important thing in that moment and get well in that one important thing and then come back to the other passions. And that applies to you in whatever area of life that you're in, that you're listening. You know, you may have to step back from some social engagements to study for the steps. You may have to step back from one or two things to make yourself available for electives. There's always a sacrifice. There's always a trade-off. So you should really prioritize the things that you want to manifest in your career. I mean, that's my, you know, prioritize it first. Because at the end of the day, you get the job, you get the position, you get into it, you get comfortable, and then you can share all you want about it, right?
Yeah. He's like, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I love that word you use, manifest, right? Because I absolutely believe in that word as well. You know, you have to just, you know, visualize what you want. As you were talking, I was thinking back, and I specifically remember, you know, being in med school, being in Ireland, and we're trying to study for our final exams, basically that will like give our grades that we put on our transcripts to send to all of our residency application, our residency programs. And one friend and I, who was also going for a surgical special, we locked ourselves in a room after our clinicals. Our clinicals go from, you know, 6 o'clock till 5 o'clock. And then from, you know, 5 o'clock till, you know, 9 o'clock every night, we were just studying together. You know, and that was for like 3 months straight. So you talk about like sacrifice. I mean, you know, we didn't see the light of day, you know, except for some, you know, the weekends when you go out. But again, like you said, if that's what your goal is, if that's what you're trying to manifest, you know, nothing else really matters. It just seemed part of the process. It wasn't anything terrible. But looking back, you're like, well, that was probably an abnormal way to live life for 3 months.
Right. Yeah, there's so many times where I was like, man, that was not a good way to live. You
know, yeah, like, exactly. Yeah.
I cut off everyone. I wasn't taking phone calls, you know, off Facebook. At the time, we didn't have Instagram. You know,
that's right.
Like in this little cubby hole by yourself every day, you know, gaining weight because you're eating and studying and that's the only thing you do. And, you know, when I look back, I'm like, that was so unhealthy.
But so, you know,
that's what it took to get here. Right.
That's what it took. You got to be the 8 out of 300, you know, whatever it is. Right.
Yeah, so it's whatever it takes. Right.
Whatever it takes. Yeah.
Well, definitely. Thank you for coming on the podcast, Dr. Adrian. We'll include your information in the show notes. So everyone that's listening, if you have more questions for Dr. Adrian, you can connect with him on Instagram at Scrubbed Out and on his website, www.scrubbedout.com. Thank you. And we hope to see you again soon on the platform.
Yeah. Thanks, Nina. That was awesome. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad to be able to reach out to everybody. Yeah. And definitely look me up. I mean, you know, sorry, really quick, I don't know how much time we have, but two other things that would be awesome to talk about would be like mentorship, because that's, I think that's huge. And I lost my train of thought, but definitely mentorship.
Yeah, well, let's get into it. I think the people are still listening. Are you guys listening? Okay. Stay tuned. So let's touch a little bit on mentorship, if you have time.
But yeah, definitely, yeah.
Mentorship, to me, can make or break a person's career. Oh, yeah. Or you may not even have a career just because you didn't find the right mentors. And you may miss out on opportunity because you didn't even know it existed because nobody was showing it to you. So it's one of those things that right now, in retrospect, I wish I had proper mentorship. But tell us from your perspective what the benefits are or what you want to share regarding mentorship.
Well, I mean, exactly what you said. I mean, I would not be sitting here, you know, talking to you as an orthopedic surgeon if I did not have the mentors that I have. And one of my mentors said it best is basically everyone, you know, nobody is an island. As much as you want to think you are, nobody does it themselves. And, you know, everybody, they, you know, stands on the shoulder of giants, whoever these giants may be, right? You know, certainly some people are very fortunate to have good mentors and some people do have to work more themselves. But I agree with you that mentors really help make or break you. And I was lucky to have mentors for a lot of the way. And it's interesting because that's what this podcast, I think, is really great for, because it allows us to connect with people who maybe need a little bit of guidance on how to navigate the process and navigate their own path. So I do really think it's important. And it's interesting because now there's that new definition of not just being a mentor, but being an advocate, right? So not just kind of telling people to, this is what you should do, but actually actively getting people into those positions, you know, to place them in a position of success. So, you know, I believe that a mentor is not necessarily somebody you can kind of be matched up with or be paired with, but I think, you know, the more you expose yourself to clinical situations or situations you're interested in, they're just gonna naturally happen a little bit, but you do have to watch out for that. And you do have to initiate as well, right? So if able, you know, find a mentor in your hospital, in your setting that can guide you. And if not, there's great resources like Anina's podcast, like this one, like we're on right now, that, and that we can guide you as well. Just, and that's the power of social media now.
Yeah. You know, I like that you said that because sometimes I've had people send me questions on Instagram. How can I find a mentor? And I'm like, there's some questions you can't really just answer like that, because finding a mentor, it's a little bit tricky because it's a relationship, right?
Yes, exactly.
It's like you don't, it's like, how do you find a wife or how do you find a husband?
Yes, exactly.
You
know,
you could just stand outside and you meet people. Are they your wife or your husband, right? But relationships take time to nurture.
Mm-hmm.
People want to be respected just as much as you want to be respected. And so my thought on that is just try to build relationships with people in positions that you admire. Mm-hmm. And then maybe that's the first step. And then from then on, you know, it could blossom into an official mentorship. And there should be a time where you expressively say, Dr. Loom, Dr. Adrian, I would like to, you know, for you to be my mentor. There should be that official transition where there is acknowledgement on both sides that there is a mentor-mentee relationship. And then it's up to that person to decide if they're going to be an advocate for you or a sponsor for you. Most attendings really do want to help other people get in because they've been through some stuff before. But they would never know that's your need if there was no pre-existing relationship. So I think instead of just like going into it, for those who are listening and kind of wondering, you know, instead of just like, I need a mentor. Well, what you need is just some relationships with people that are in positions that you admire. And then you just start to filter through, because some relationships are going to work and some are not going to work. That's life. You're not going to have a personality that maybe, you know, I don't know, resonates with the other person. But eventually, those relationships grow and blossom. And then you find a person that you can really relate with and that can relate with you. But, you know, just for those listening, it is a vital part. There's no right or wrong way to find a mentor. Start somewhere.
Yeah. And oftentimes, like you said, it just starts with a question. You know, if you're on a clinical rotation with somebody, like for example, with me, and you're interested in ortho, and just say, hey, you know, Dr. Adrian, how did you get to where you are? You know, or Dr. Nina, how did you get to where you are? Or it's an email saying, you know, I'm an IMG. I like to be an orthopedic surgeon. How do I get there? You know,
yeah.
And you know, like you said, it may naturally blossom into something more official in terms of mentor-mentee relationship. But if not, at least you kind of get one step closer in that path and in that direction.
Right. Absolutely. I agree with you 100% on that. Yeah. So you guys know where to find him if you want to ask him mentoring questions. We'll have his information in the show notes. But yeah, thanks for bringing that up, because I think that's a key topic. Absolutely. And we should probably do a whole episode just really discussing that.
Yeah, you can go deep on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's a big deal in medicine now. Yeah. Well, any other things you want to talk about?
No, I mean, I think we covered most of it. But I mean, like you said, if anybody, you know, has any questions about specifically orthopedic surgery or in Canada navigating the IMG route, I mean, feel free to, you know, hit me up on any of my social media, like you said, Scrubbed Out, or my website, www.scrubbedout.com. And that is my own little pitch there. So my shameless plug. So, but truly, you know, I mean, we're all here for the same reason. And, you know, once you're in the medicine, you know, family, everyone's really tight.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Nina. That was awesome.